Good evening, everybody. My name is Russell. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey,
I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's good to be here. And actually, this is probably one of my favorite steps. I don't know, sometimes it seems like whatever step I'm talking about is my favorite step, but you know, it's funny that I should even say it's one of my favorite steps, and I think you'll understand the irony of it after I'm done talking. I think that, well, first of all, I happen to know that I hate pain. I don't like pain. I don't like not being in control. I've spent my entire life, up to and including tonight, I think, avoiding pain. I think the best way, in my mind, somehow it seems to me the best way to avoid pain is to be in control. I never want to be in a situation where I'm not in control. You know, that means that I need to have a lot of money. It means a lot of things. With control, it means a lot of things. It has to do with social situations. I think a lot of reasons why people, maybe don't like to speak, or they say one of the greatest fears is public speaking, is the fear of not being in control. Not being in control of what people think about you, you know, putting yourself up there to be judged, and what if you make a mistake and stuff like that. But when I look back on it, of course, you know, it's funny, this is the kind of thing, like, you don't know this like in sixth grade, you know what I mean? When you got all these feelings and emotions, you don't know this like in your 20s. But you know, if you work these steps and you do this stuff and you get some insight, you know, where you think you knew about your life, you think you knew what you were about, you think you knew what made you move, you really think you knew, you had like a plan or something, but somewhere along the line, I'm 60 years now, you look back and say it was all BS. It was all about trying to be in control and being scared of not being in control. Everything was about control and not getting hurt. You know, get all the money in the world, all the things in the world, all the, you know, the job, it was all about anything but not being in control. So I remember, you know, I'm one of these guys. I went, you know, I was upper middle class, I suppose, and I went through school, and I went through law school, and I got a job, and the whole thing was about buying a house and getting married and getting a degree and, you know, going up in the organization and getting power and prestige and all that sort of stuff, to not get hurt. So I could never get hurt. I was scared of being hurt. I wouldn't have ever admitted this to you. Well, why would I admit it to you? It's not like I even knew it myself. But I don't like situations where I don't feel in control. You know, I drank because of that. I didn't realize that then. That was part of the drinking. You know, you go into that bar, and you know, I heard some guy said, and it was true for me. You know, you worry about whether people will like you, whether you come off okay, whether you'll be able to be a member of the group. You take a couple of shots of scotch, and you feel like you own the group, like you're in charge of the group. You know what I mean? Man, I'll tell you, really, how can that stuff be bad? Your whole life, you're worrying about what people will think about you. And whether you can be belonging in the group, and you take a couple of shots, and you're like king of the group. And you don't give a crap with it. You know, I mean, it's all about control of that control. And so, and that doesn't stop. As a matter of fact, when I think about newcomers in AA, new people, and when I say new people, I'm talking about even myself. And what do they, and, you know, I don't know if there's any newcomers here tonight. Within the first year, 10 years, whatever it is, you know. Within the first 10 years, you're a newcomer too, you know. But if you ever listen to a newcomer panicking, you know what newcomer panic looks like? It's scary, isn't it? You know? If you ever look at a newcomer panicking, you know, bouncing off the walls and panicking over something, it's all about not being in control. They took my car. I'm losing my house. You know, my wife. Yeah, it's all about not being in control. They're scared because they're not in control. They're absolutely petrified because they're not in control. And you know, we start talking to them about acceptance, you know, calm down, and we say things like, well, don't drink, go to meetings, listen to the group, and everything. All we're really trying to do without even knowing it is we're trying to divert their attention from the fact that they're just not in control. You know what I mean? And so maybe they got a shot of realizing what happens when they get, what's the wellness come? The wellness come and they say, well, I'm not in control. And they accept it. And they realize they're not in control, they accept it, and then all of a sudden they're okay. Yeah, there's nothing I can do about it. But the whole yelling and screaming and pushing and getting on the phone saying, you can't do that to me, and who do you think you are, and I'll show you, and I'll get a lawyer. All that stuff is about trying to gain control by screaming, by yelling, by being in fear, by all that sort of stuff, you know? And you know, that urge to be in control so that you're not hurt, you know? And you can make sure nobody could ever hurt you. And you can protect yourself. That urge, it doesn't stop when you stop drinking. When you put the plug in, you don't put the plug in the jug and all of a sudden, hey, that you don't have a problem. As a matter of fact, the problem gets worse. That's the bad news, you know what I mean? Because we don't really know we're not in control, but deep down inside, unless you're psychotic, you know you're not in control. You understand what I'm saying? You know, here's what you know deep down inside if you're an alcoholic. You know that it's a big, scary world. You have no control, and you ain't up to the job. You know what I mean? You just ain't up to the job. And so what happens is, what I used to do is I used to drink a lot. Because if you drink a lot, let me tell you something. You go to a bar at about 4 o'clock and you start slugging down the booze, let me tell you something. You may not be in control, but you sure feel like you're in control. You feel, you know, like you can whip the entire Russian army, you know, right there. That's a great feeling. But, you know, then you stop drinking, and that's a horrible feeling. You know, that's a feeling. And, you know, I'm going to have to tell you something, and I don't even want to tell you this, but I'm thinking, I am weak. Now, that's the problem, or the solution. It's either the problem or the solution, I'm not sure, but it happens to be the facts. The facts are that I am unbelievably weak and not up to the job. If there's anybody in here who says, you know, I like Russ, like he seems like he's self-conscious, he seems like, yeah, he says, what you're really seeing is the fact that I know I'm weak. What you're seeing has nothing to do with me. Whatever power, whatever you see in me, if you think I'm... It has not, because when I was strong, I was in bad shape. When I was strong, I was in bad shape. You know, and that's the problem. You know, in this kind of deal, when you're an alcoholic, you have alcoholism that goes on after you stop drinking. Your natural state is to be alcoholic and to have alcoholism. So whatever you naturally used to do out there before you were drinking or when you weren't drinking, or what you naturally want to do now, is part and parcel of your alcoholism. And you know something? It feels comfortable to you. It feels right to you. You actually, like me, want to be an alcoholic. That's my natural tendency. You see, if it wasn't my natural tendency, I wouldn't have to go to these meetings. I wouldn't need a sponsor. I wouldn't have to work the steps. I wouldn't have to constantly be inundated with all this stuff and all this sort of stuff. It wasn't my natural tendency. You know, my natural tendency is, if you want to know what I really like and who I really am, you really have to catch me before AA. If you really want to know what my natural predilections are and who I really am, you got to catch me about a year or two before AA, or you got to catch me after AA if I'm not going to meetings. And then you'll understand exactly who I am and what I want to be. Don't look at me in meetings with a sponsor, you know, working this thing to the best of my ability and say, well, that's the way Russell is. That's not the way I am. You need to catch me not going to meetings, sober, with no sponsor, doing this thing on my own. Then you'll understand exactly who I am. Has anybody ever done that deal? You ever done that deal? And not maybe not even drink, just, you know, gone out there on your own and done your own thing and say, screw I had done your own thing. Well, if you remember what that felt like and what that all was up, that's the way you are. Then, I mean, I know that's the way you are because that was you all alone the way you are with no other outside influences. Now, it, with a desire to be in control and manipulate and being scared, you know, and feeling vulnerable, I hate that crap, you know? I'll do anything to avoid that deal. So, I got this crazy step here called the seventh step. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. And, you know, the thing that sort of pops up, by the way, it says, let's say humbly ask him, doesn't it? Whoever he is. Maybe it's probably the doorknob for you. You have to talk to the doorknob. They must be talking about the doorknob, right? Maybe it's the great frog. The giant turkey. I mean, yeah. I don't know why they said him. They could have said turkey, you know? The chair, you know, the cloud or something. It says humbly asked him. Well, whoever he is, I don't think it's like Joe Schwartz down the street, but I mean, asked him to remove our shortcomings. But the thing that pops up on me, well, listen, by the time you get, you know, hopefully, prayerfully, by the time you get to step seven, having already been through step three, you'll start getting like a clue. You'll start vectoring in on him. You know, somewhere along the line, unless you're really fighting this deal, and we do fight this deal. Listen, sobriety, sobriety, doing this, what this program, what feels good is being alcoholic. In other words, what feels good and comfortable, you can do alcoholic without any book. Now listen, trust me, you can do alcoholism without a book. You don't need a sponsor to do alcoholism. As a matter of fact, books, sponsors, steps, other people's advice, gurus, old timers, trust me on this, they just get in the way. You know what I mean? They get in the way. You guys are like fine-tuned automobiles. You are great alcoholics without any of this stuff, okay? This stuff sort of gets in the way. And what happens is, since we feel comfortable and we naturally want to be alcoholics, because that's the nature of disease. And by the way, this ain't me talking. I want to say something. Look in the book. You know what it says? It says we are not cured. It says that, doesn't it? We are not cured of this disease. It's got to do it every day, you know? And the Bible and biblical comes, they say every day you got to put on the full armor of God. You got to do this every single day, you know? They may not be alcoholics, they're humanaholics. It's similar, but they don't drink and they're not as crazy as we are, you know? But it's sort of like the same sort of emotions and things, just a little bit milder case. But, so, now the thing is, the problem is, these things that we do in here, these things that this, you know why we need a chart? You know why we need this charted out? Because if we didn't have this charted out, we wouldn't have a clue. You understand that, don't you? Does anybody in here actually believe that if we didn't have this written out, or if we didn't have this book, you'd like stumble upon this? You'd like, in other words, you'd be walking along being your alcoholic self, like you always were, and say, you know, I've got a lot of defects of character. It's nobody else's fault. Nobody's to blame but me. You know, I'm delusional. I'm selfish, as a matter of fact. You know? It's not that life is unfair or wrong. I've got to fit myself to life. You know? I've got to figure out what all... You know, I think I'll list them all. I'll write them all down. I'll write down all my resentments, my resent. And you know something? I won't even think about the people I'll resent. You know what I mean? I'll say, where was I to blame? I got to look at my own faults. And then, you know, I think I'll find somebody and confess all my sins to them. Immediately, you know what I mean? And then I want to find all those people, and I want to sort of make amends to them and tell them I was sorry and I was wrong. I mean, you think you got a shot? Look, you're not even going to get to step two, you know? You're not going to do any of this stuff unless it was charted out for you. We don't have a shot. Our disease works so against this deal. It's amazing to me that we can fill a room. Really, it's exciting, you know? How does this happen? How could this possibly happen? This is not possible. So here's the deal. This is the other thing you gotta remember. This is just my opinion. I think that when we start doing this stuff, I mean actually doing it and looking at everything, I think it doesn't feel good. I think it feels bad. I think it feels uncomfortable. I think it feels uncomfortable. I think it's uncomfortable to do that. I don't think it's comfortable to do this stuff. Hey, you know something? If it was comfortable to do this stuff, doing the fourth step would be like rolling off a log. You know something? You'd have to tie people down when they came to AA to prevent them from doing their fourth step too fast. You know? They'd be saying, wait, I want to do my fourth step right now. Quick, give me a basin. No, tie him down. He's in a four-step frenzy. No, oh, I got to do a fifth step. You got to sit down and listen to me. I want to be honest. I mean, you'd have to tie him down. Instead of saying, well, it's 3 years and I haven't done my fourth step yet. You know? I know I should probably do it. You know, if turning your will and life over to God was easy, man, I'll tell you, it'd be unbelievable what would be going on in these rooms. Instead, we sit here like Bill Wilson and say, ah, well, you shouldn't talk so much about God. I mean, everything. It says that some of these we balked, every one of them, all the time. All the time. And we try to cruise and, what does it say, rest on our spiritual laurels? Okay, so now we get to this crazy-ass step. I don't know why I like it so much. I don't know why, because you are going to find it ironic. Maybe I'll figure it out while I'm talking to you why I like it so much. You know, they say the sixth step separates men from the boys. It's somewhere, I think it has something to do with that deal. Because I just like hanging around with old-timers. I've always liked hanging around old-timers. I'm such an alcoholic. I've been involved with so much phony baloney shit all my life. I live my whole life hanging around phony baloney shit. Superficial, selfish, phony baloney shit. I am like inundated in phony baloney shit. Sometimes it's like trudging through the desert of horse shit to find just one decent, genuine person that I can love, respect, and listen to. I think that I have a sponsor now, and I have people that I love to be with, and I love to hang out with, and I love to listen to. They're usually about 80 or 90 years old, quite frankly, you know, and, a lot of them I find in church and things like that and all that sort of stuff. But one of the things I miss about being a newcomer is when you got like 1 year or 2 years or 1 month or 2 months or 5 years, you know, it seems like A rooms are populated with a lot of guys with 10, 15, 20, 30, people are so far ahead of you. And there's a lot of people that have what you want, and it's like you're almost like a child surrounded by big parents. You know what I mean? And you know that you can almost be at times humble, because you know people will say things. You'll listen to them. You'll pay attention. You know, and there's a great line in the Bible, in Corinthians, where the Apostle Paul, who is a big shot. And I'm not going to go into that whole, that's a big deal. He wrote the whole deal. And he says, now I have a theory that, you'll like this, I have a theory that the Apostle Paul was a whacked out addict. But that's a whole other story, you know? I can prove it to you. But this is going to prove it to you right here. One of the things he says is he had this great vision, this great road to Damascus experience, you know, this great thing where he turned around. And he says, to keep me from becoming conceited, he said, I was given this horrendous satanic thorn in my flesh. Never tells what it is, thorn in my flesh. You know, now people want to say he was nearsighted, but satanic thorns in your flesh, I know what that's all about. You know what I mean? He's the guy that says, I did things I don't want to do. I don't think that what a wretched piece of crap I am. You know, he was like, there was something going on with Paul. We don't know what it was, okay? But I don't know if it was women, I don't know if it was drugs, I don't know what it was, but Paul had a problem. He says, and this is what he says. He says this, he says, I asked God 3 times to remove it. And this is the answer he got. He said, I'm going to paraphrase a little. He said, God said, I will not take this from you. He says, my grace will be sufficient for you one day at a time to get through this deal. Because when you're weak, I'm strong. When you're weak, I'm strong. You know, sometimes, every once in a while, you'll see an alcoholic in AA pick up a white chip. You ever see anybody pick up a white chip? Everybody claps for him. You ever talk to guys who just pick up light chip? They're like, they're almost, a lot of them are nice. I don't even know what that's all about. You know what I mean? Because I know they're alcoholic. I know they're anything but nice. You know what I mean? Because I know, you know, I know 3 days before they picked up the light chip, they were being arrested and they were beating up people. You know what I mean? Or stealing. Or robbing and saying, you know. And I know 6 months from picking up the white chip, you're going to want to shoot them. You know what I mean? Because I know what they're going to be. Now, when they're picking, when they have that little thing around them, around the right chip, when they actually stand up in front of a group of people and they walk to the front of the room and they make themselves vulnerable and they're not in control and they don't know what's going on in here. Because I know what that's about because I did that deal. Anybody ever do this deal? So here's the deal. I'm like a big shot. I'm a big shot. I'm 25 years old. I'm 26. I'm 20. I'm a big shot. Listen, I was a big shot. Bullshit. But I was. I was a division chief in the state's attorney's office. I was prosecuting murder cases. I had 3 or 4 or 5 attorneys underneath me. I could indict you. Down here, they had a cool thing. If you were like, you know, if you were a division chief and everything, I could look at James and say, you know, I don't like that guy. Now, I wouldn't say to my boss, I wouldn't say, you know, I'm going to indict James because I don't like that guy. But, you know, we'd start investigating James. We'd find out something about him, you know, because you could just look at James and know there's evidence all over him. Probably out of his car right now. It's somewhere, you know what I mean? I'd send a couple of cops out or something would happen. They'd bring him to me. We'd end up indicting him, his mother, his whole family and everything. We'd charge him with it because here you don't have to indict him. You can just an attorney signs a picture. We got, you know, when you're a young alcoholic and you're an egomaniac with an inferiority complex and you're given power, you know, and he says, and you're able to actually indict somebody or file information against them. And especially when you think you're right and they're bad and you're good, man, that's heady stuff. You know, I love that crap, you know? And I was good at what I did. I was good at putting people in jail. I liked it. And, you know, the bottom line is that that was my life. That's what I did. You know, try to control, lord over people, get power, do that kind of stuff. You know, got married, destroyed that marriage. Left that wife, left that kid, you know, just ripping, raping, robbing through life. Just doing it my way. So imagine this, that I get to the point where I have no money, completely lose my self-respect, completely lose all semblance of self-esteem. I can't stop drinking. And I go from that life to sitting one day in the back of an AA room with about as many people as this at my first AA meeting. And I'm the newest guy in the room. And I'm in the back by the door. Okay? And I'm sitting there and I think my life is over. And I don't know anybody in the room. Okay? And I don't have any of that. I'm not indicting anybody. I'm not doing anything. I'm just sitting in the back of the room. The newest guy in Alcoholics Anonymous, not having any clue as to what's going on here. You understand what I'm saying? Totally weak, no money, no nothing, sitting in the back of the room. And at the end of the meeting, and I don't even know what this is about, they do this. I'm not even sure I heard what they were saying or what the meeting was about. And some person holds up a chip for anybody who's a newcomer, and I don't even know why I did it. And I walk from the back of the room up to the front of the room and I pick up the chip and everybody starts clapping for it. Anybody ever done that deal? Listen to me. That's a humbling experience. That's a humbling experience. I'll tell you what. I don't know if it's a humbling experience for everybody. It was a humbling experience for me. I was at my best that moment. It all went downhill from there. When you're weak, I was at my best. You know, I wasn't there to control anybody. I wasn't there to tell anybody what to do. I wasn't there to tell everybody, look at what a big shot I was. You know, as a matter of fact, what I was doing, I was getting up and saying, I need help. I'm the sickest guy in the room. I need more help than anybody. Will you help me? You know what it takes to walk up in front of 40 or 50 or 100 strangers and pick up a chip at 32 or 31 years old and say that you need help? You know, basically say, look, I'm the newest guy here. You know, I'm the weakest guy here. I need to do this because I don't know how to live my life. You know what it takes? I don't know whether I could have done that in 5 years. You know, 5 years, you don't have to do that. You can pick up a 5-year medallion. You may have a 10-year medallion. Let me show you how I did it in 10 years. But you know, it's nice to pick up a 10-year medallion. It's nice to pick up a 28-year medallion. It's nice to pick up a 15-year medallion. But you want to know something? It's nice to pick up a 1-year medallion, isn't it? You know? It's a good feeling, isn't it? But it's not the same feeling as picking up a white chip, is it? Yeah. You know what it feels like to pick up a 1-year medallion? It feels like winning. It feels good. It feels like you're well. It almost feels like you're in control. That you got somewhere. You know what it feels like picking up a 20-year medallion? It feels like indicting somebody. Feels good. Sponsor a lot of people, you know what I mean? Room's sort of looking up to you. You know, 20 years is pretty cool, you know what I mean? Not like, yeah, we're all shooting for that 20-year, that 25-year, that 15-year deal, isn't it, you know? Seems good, the room sort of applauds. There's nothing wrong with that, I'm not saying that. It's not like picking up a white chip, is it? It's not like that, is it? But you see, that seven-step deal, it's not like 20 years. It's like that. That is like that. In order to do that, you got to get back to this. See, listen, it's easy to do that when you have 3 hours. See, when you have no money, and you have no place to stay, and you have no friends, and you don't know how you're going to survive, and you're scared, and you're alone, hey, listen to me. It's easy to do this, and it's easy to do that. But it's tough doing that after you've been sober for a while. And you've done your 4-step and the 5th step, maybe you're sponsoring some people and you're being sponsored in your room. That deal is tough. That humbly deal is tough. How do you get to that humbly deal? I don't know whether you ever get to the point where it's like this. You know? It's hard to get to that point. You know, in the 12 and 12, this is what it says. And the reason I've gotten there sober. But the only way you get there, you really get there. You see, this is the problem. We look at these steps like steps you have to do. But that's only, in my opinion, based upon my experience, that's only partially true, especially with the 7th step. The 7th step is not something you do. The 7th step is done to you. Trust me, you will do the 7th step. Or not. But when you do the 7th step, it won't be because you want to do the 7th step. It won't be because you decided to get humble. Believe me, you won't do the 7th step because you're saying, well, I think I'll get humble and do the 7th step. I mean, doing the 7th step, that's like saying, well, I think I'll get whatever it takes to do the white chip. Do you remember how you did the white chip? You didn't like plan on that, did you? Like 3 weeks before the white chip, you said, well, I'll, the white chip was some, it's sort of like happened to you, right? When you think about it, I mean, you did it. You got up and you picked it up. But when you think about it, what got you there to pick up the white chip, it was sort of like something that sort of like just, you were there, but you were like a bit player. You know what I mean? Somehow you got there in the position, you found yourself standing up and picking it up. But if you had your way, you would have just as soon not volunteered for that deal. I mean, you did the white chip, but in a sense, you really had nothing to do with doing the white chip. Because in order to get to the white chip, you had to be destroyed. You know, well, this is what I'll do. I'll just destroy my entire self and my life, my self-esteem. I'll wind up in the AA room. I'll just sort of plan that deal, you know? So that's like what the 7th step is about. Now, listen, I don't know how many people have been in here in AA for long enough to get humbled in AA. You know, you get in here and you feel pretty good and you, you maybe have to be on a pink cloud, and even after you fall off the pink cloud, but you may find the time, you know, I've been around long enough, 28 years is long enough, so that I've experienced serious problems in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I'm 60 years old, so I've had some health problems, cancer. I've had financial problems here. I've been foreclosed on with kids and a wife twice. In AA, many years sober. 9 years and 12 years sober. You know, I mean, I've had things happen to me in AA that have been devastating emotionally and spiritually that have gotten me to the point where I don't know whether it's exactly like where I was when I did my white chip thing, but where I felt like I had no power, where I was power. I've been involved long enough. You know what's funny in here? Here's the funny thing. We feel great in AA when we feel strong, when we feel like we're in control, when everything's going our way. But the growth in character only happens when you get the shit knocked out of you. See, I know that. I don't like it. It's not my plan. I would have written a different book. It would have been a different plan. You know what I mean? This ain't my book. I don't like the rules. I don't like the way... I'm like the Apostle Paul. I want the thorn, you know, taken out. I want to be Superman. I want to be Tiger Woods. I want to win all the time. I don't like this. It will not be removed from you. You're going to be doing this on your knees all the time. You're going to suffer, crap, you know, build character. I don't like this boot camp crap. You know what I mean? But I mean, I'm just telling you, if you happen to be around in here for a number of years and you find yourself in a position where you think your life is over, it's never going to get better, okay, and you hate where you are and you can't believe it and you're dying and you think everything's going wrong and you want to kill yourself, and you find yourself going to more meetings and trying to figure out what God's all about, and you say, this is crap. If this is what it's all about, why has this happened to me? Let me tell you something. You're in a great place. AA-wise. AA-wise, you're in a great place. And I'm going to tell you something. If you do this deal, I'm going to tell you something else. You're going to be in that. You're going to be in that place many times. If you do this thing, you're going to be in that. You're going to be doing that desert time many times. You don't have to take my word for it. I'm not asking you to take my word for it. I'm asking you just stay sober and live your life. Now, the good part about it is when you get there and you're all alone and it's 3 o'clock in the morning and you're scared and you don't know what to do, at least you'll say, this must be what Russell was talking about. And you'll know you're not going to die. You'll know you're on the right track. So it'll be horrible, but at least you'll know that others have gone before you on this deal. So here's what it says. So now I'm saying all that. That's my experience so that maybe you'll understand a little bit better. I'm sure a lot of you do. Something that's said in the 12 and 12 when they talk about the seventh step. Because we think what life is all about is being in control, gathering up stuff, getting the job, getting the wife or the husband, getting the car, having the money, the material things, having romantic relationships. That's what we think it's all about, because the truth of the matter is, in most of AA, that's the only thing they talk about. They don't talk about AA. They don't talk about AA and AA. They talk about the same stuff you were talking about in the bars before you came into AA. We just talk about that stuff because that's what we really believe in, but we do it over coffee. You understand? A rooms are like bars, but they serve coffee. And so you talk most of the time about the same shit. The conversation in A rooms is no different than the conversation in the bars, except nobody's throwing up on anybody. They're drinking coffee. You know what I mean? And most people are somewhat polite, you know? But it's all about my mother, my father, my sister, my aunt, my girlfriend, my wife, the job, money. It's the same stuff you talk about in bars, but without slurring your words. But you think it like has something to do with the program of Alcoholics Anonymous because you happen to be in a room and it's called like the Fourth Dimension Club. So this must be AA. You're sitting around with your girlfriends and your boyfriends and everything like that. And you're talking about all the bullshit. You're not talking about what the stuff that's really real. You're talking about the stuff that you want to talk about that makes you comfortable. That alcoholism stuff. That's important to alcoholics before any transformation. And you're talking about, now, here's what happened to AA. The good thing about AA is once in a while, once in a blue moon, if you're in an AA room and you're talking about some shit like that, you know what I mean? Some guy will walk in the room who's got like 25 or 30 years or 40 years and doesn't have his ass up his head up his ass. And it'll just sit down next to you and start talking about something different. It won't be that stuff. It'll be something different. Okay? And you'll find that you're listening to that person. And you're listening to them because it sort of makes sense in a strange way, but you don't quite understand it, but it intrigues you. And you really like it, and you'll feel good about it. And then that person will get up and walk away. And you'll feel good for a few minutes, then you go back to talking about the horse shit you were talking about before. But you remember that there was a time, there was a time when you talked about something really strange and different. They said, what did that guy say? You got what he said? Yeah, he said, I'm not sure that's what he said. Maybe you'll repeat it. You know, you do that enough times in Alcoholics Anonymous, you end up being the guy that walks in and sits down at the table. See, every once in a while you got a shot of being steered in the right direction. So here's what's now, after we've done all that, let me read you what step 7 says, what they say in step 7 of 12 and 12. Certainly no alcoholic, and surely no member of AA, wants to deprecate or put down material achievement. You know, we don't want to put down the girls, the guys, the cars, and all that sort of stuff. At least that's what we say. He says, nor do we enter into a debate with the many who so passionately cling to the belief that to satisfy our basic natural desires is the main object of life. We don't want to get into an argument on that. But, you know when you say but, you know what that means? That means forget everything else we said before. But, we are sure that no class of people in the world ever made a worse mess of trying to live by this formula than alcoholics. So what they're basically saying, but for you, you better stay away from that crap. You know what I mean? The crap that you're always thinking about, the crap that's always on your mind, the crap that you're worried about, the crap that's running your life. For thousands of years, we have been demanding more than our share of security, prestige, and romance. Now, here's the deal. I know that the only thing you guys talk about or think about 90% of the time is security, prestige, or romance. I know when you walk out of here, you're going to be thinking about security. You're going to be thinking about money, homes, cars. I know you're going to be thinking about romance. I know you're going to be thinking about prestige. You're going to be, this is what you're going to be thinking about. This is what you're going to be complaining about. I know this is what you're going to be talking to your sponsor about. Listen, it's not bad or good. It is the disease. It is the problem. You get it? It's the problem. It's the thing that activates the defects of character. It's the problem. It doesn't make you a bad person. Good, it makes you an alcoholic. You just see it for what it is. When you're out there thinking this crap, you know what the problem is? We're in such an automatic pilot. We just think and do and act all the time. We don't even think about what we're thinking about. We don't think about, all we know is we feel bad. What's the matter? I feel bad. I don't know, I feel depressed. I feel bad, I don't feel good. He says, why don't you feel, I don't know, I just don't feel good. He says, what do you think? You ask somebody enough questions, says, Sally. Donald. Money. It all comes down, it's going to come out down to one of these three things. Believe me, no alcoholics are going to say, I'm depressed. Why? God. I've been seeking God. I'm depressed. You know, for some reason, people who are seeking God, or, you know, I've been reading the Bible and seeking God and, you know, trying to, you know, help other people, and I'm depressed. You don't get that in here. It's all about this stuff. For thousands of years, we've been demanding more than our share of security, prestige, and romance. When we seemed to be succeeding, we drank to dream still greater dreams. When we were frustrated, even in part, we drank for oblivion. Never was there enough of what we thought we wanted. In all these strivings, so many of them well-intentioned, our crippling handicap had been our lack of humility. That's that lack of humble stuff. We lacked the perspective to see that character building and spiritual values had to come first. Then it goes on to a lot of good stuff. You really ought to read this when it goes home, as far as self-reliance and think we're on the right track and really think we're doing something when we're getting more and more into the material aspects of this. You know, even picking up, well, listen, I'm all for picking up things at birthdays and all that sort of stuff. Even that can be a trap for self-esteem and for prestige and things like that. Now, here's what it says. You're going to like this part. 72. For us. He's talking about me. He's talking about you. Now, if you don't like what I'm about to say, you need to write New York. Because this ain't my, I didn't write this. And I ain't making this up, and this is conference approved. For us, if you choose to hang around here, the process of gaining a new perspective, a new way of thinking about this, in other words, let's say getting to think about this thing the way I think about this thing, was unbelievably painful. Now listen, not just painful. No. It doesn't say for us the process. No, it doesn't say for us the process of getting a new perspective was painful. It doesn't say that. It says unbelievably painful. You understand? Now I know most of you don't read that, and I know when you read it, you don't think about it. And I know even when you think about it, you think, well, there's going to be a little pain. I know you said, it doesn't say there's going to be a little pain, but I know you think, well, it's not going to be that bad. You know what I mean? It's going to be worse than you can possibly imagine if you do this thing right. Because that's how bad the disease is. Did you guys come into Alcoholics Anonymous and stop drinking because you had like a bad Saturday night? Got a bad batch of ice or something? Do you happen to remember what was going on at the time? It was a bad deal, wasn't it? You don't really want to go through it again. It wasn't like, what do you say? When you tell your story, it says, well, it was a little painful. Is that what you say? It was unbelievably painful. It was only by repeated humiliations. You know what that means? More than once. That we were forced to learn something about humility. It was only at the end of a long road, marked by successive defeats, a lot of defeats. Like, when will I ever have money? Well, if you're lucky, never. You know, if you're poor and broke all the time, all you got is God. If you got money, then you go out, buy things, you go around and everything like that. See, I can tell already 50% of you are resigning from the organization. Because I know that what you really think is that this is the tick of a rocket to stardom. That you guys are going to come to AA, get sober, become like Britney Spears. Multi-millionaire. That this is a rocket to stardom. You know? This is a rocket to stardom, all right, but it's a different type of deal. What these guys were focused on was different. It doesn't mean alcoholics don't do well. There are a lot of alcoholics that do well. But that's not our focus in here. It was only at the end of a long road marked by successive defeats and humiliations and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. Does that sound good to you? This is the seventh step. Now, you understand why you don't do the seventh step. Because nobody's going to do this shit. You're not even going to volunteer for this stuff. This stuff is going to happen to you. Now you're saying to me, well, how is this going to happen? Just wait and see. You'll tell us about it. But you'll know it when it's happening. Hey, some of you guys, there's a few guys in here that it's happening to right now. There's some people in AA that it's happening to right now. The final crushing of ourself is that we began to feel humility as something more than a condition of groveling despair. Every newcomer in Alcoholics Anonymous is told and soon realized for himself that his humble admission of powerless over alcohol is the first step towards liberation from his paralyzing grip. So it is that we first see humility as necessary. Now here's a good part that I like to read. This improved perception of humility. See, we don't like that humble humility part. You know what I mean? I don't know what you think humbled is. What do you think that is? Humbly. What do you guys think that humble? You see, asking God is easy. You know, you say a prayer. God help me. God give me money. You know, God bless, you know. But the humbly part is tough. What do you think that humbly feels like? You know what it feels like? It feels like this. It feels like asking him like this. This improved possession of humility starts another revolutionary change in our outlook. Now here's another change in your outlook. You're gonna like this when you start getting into this stuff. How would you like to change your outlook? I know some of you are gonna say, not me, this ain't never gonna happen. You'll see. This improved perception of humility starts another revolutionary change in our outlook. our eyes begin to open to the immense values which have come straight out of painful ego puncturing. Yes, beat the crap out of me and hurt me and puncture my ego and make me feel like shit. It's great. Thank you, Lord. Do that again. That's the new outlook. Until now, our lives have been largely devoted to running from pain and problems. Where did I hear that before? We fled from them as a plague. We never wanted to deal with the fact of suffering. Escape via the bottle was always our solution. Character building through suffering might be all right for saints, but it certainly didn't appeal to us. See, you see, this stuff is all cool. It's all great, four steps, until you get to the saint crap, the suffering crap, the wanting to get righteous and perfect crap of the sixth step, and right with God crap, until you get to the suffering crap, and giving up all the bullshit, until you start getting real. You know, until you start getting down, you know, the stuff that sounds like it's like a saint thing, or it's like a little bit too, you know, all of a sudden there's no parties. All of a sudden, you know, it's not glamorous. The romance is gone. They're talking about really being beaten down so you can be useful to God. Now it's selling sound. Now we're starting to lose a lot of people. That's why we don't have like 20 guys with 20 years in here. That's when people saying, listen, that's your program. That's okay for you. Okay. But that's not my program. Then in AA, we looked and listened. Everywhere we saw failure and misery transformed by humility into priceless assets. He said, you know, what God said to Paul is, he says, I know this thing is beating you down. I know this thing's, I know it's killing you. I know it's killing you to get on your knees every day and come to me and say, please help me. I know it's killing you all the time to feel like you're not in control and you're vulnerable. I know it kills you to turn your life over to me and be hugging on to me. And being scared all the time, and going to those meetings, and going to those sponsors, and do whatever you can because you feel like you're not in full control of your life and you're powerless. I know it's bothering you, but you want something? I'm not going to take that leash. I'm not going to do it, Paul. He says, because I'm going to be sufficient if you turn to me, you're going to be okay. And when you're weak, I'm strong in you. When you're not weak, you're lost. You understand what that deal is all about? It's been around for many years. And we heard story after story of how humility brought strength out of weakness. In every case, pain had been the price of admission into a new life. But this admission price had purchased more than we expected. It brought a measure of humility, which we soon discovered to be a healer of pain. We began to fear pain less and desire humility even more. Well, that's gotta be an interesting way of looking at life. I'm gonna close that. When you don't worry about pain so much, you don't worry about going through stuff, you still don't like it, but you understand it's part of the process. You almost welcome it. You almost say, you know, I'm going to be okay, and you trust in God. It's certainly not alcoholic, is it? It's not alcoholic. So thank you very much.